This is episode 658 of the AWS podcast, released on March 18th, 2024.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AWS podcast. I'm your host for today, Jillian Ford. And I know a lot of you have been wanting to hear some customer stories about how they're doing some really cool things in AWS. And we've got a really good one. We've got Mobileye and Daniel from the account team at Mobileye to really share their journey of going into Kubernetes and specifically EKS. So let's do some intros. Daniel, you want to kick things off?
Yes. Hi, Jillian. And hi, everyone. My name is Daniel Goldenstein-Barr. I'm an AWS solutions architect working with Mobileye in the last 2.5 years as part of the AWS account team. I'm based in Israel and I'm working with the enterprise segment in AWS.
And Bensi, our star from Mobileye.
I'm Bensi. My full name is actually Bensi on Lifshitz, but let's just keep with Bensi. I think it would be easier for everyone. I'm working at Mobileye's RAM, which is the component that creates the map that is the base for the autonomous vehicle to drive on. So we are creating the technological map, like AV map for the autonomous vehicle.
So cool. Oh my gosh. And then knowing that like Kubernetes is a part of that. So I'm sure a lot of people are like, all right, let's go through the actual journey of being able to get to Kubernetes and specifically EKS. So can you walk us through that?
Previously, first of all, the way we are creating the map is by running a lot. I wouldn't say other phrase, but I think it's not proper for a podcast, but we are running massive loads of Spark applications that are creating the map, okay? So hundreds of thousands of CPUs running and creating the map. And we need a system to orchestrate all of that. And we previously had another system that ran pretty good, but it didn't have the abilities of Kubernetes. It didn't have the dynamic configuration style of Kubernetes. We couldn't add components to the systems very, very easily. We couldn't view everything. We couldn't add third parties components to the system. And we were very stuck in what we have. Like to upgrade the system was a headache. And we wanted to go to a better place where we can actually build a massive scale platform on top of Kubernetes. And because we're AWS savvy, we wanted to try EKS for that.
Wow, so cool. And I'm just curious because I know a lot of people that I talk to who want to make the journey to Kubernetes, they've got mixed experience. Some do have experience with Kubernetes, some don't. In your team, what was the experience with Kubernetes like before going to EKS?
So we haven't had any experience in Kubernetes. We had other teams in Mobileye, not our team, that had experience. And we actually, before we started the journey, we asked them about it and how they managed to do with it. And we saw that they are also running a massive scale in Kubernetes. So we got the approval that it is possible to run a massive scale on Kubernetes. But everybody told us since the beginning, it's a very complicated system. It's good if you want to run a very complicated system on top of it. But if you just want to run something very simple, do not use Kubernetes. But for complicated systems, for massive scale systems, this is a very good decision to go on the guest. And Daniel can...
Yes. Yeah, and let me provide some like a high-level overview. Mobileye are doing basically is a very large Spark operation, building those AV or HD maps that Bensi has mentioned. The process is starting with ingestion of a lot of harvesting of a lot of data that is coming from the vehicle itself, driving all over the roads across the large continent of the world, mapping semantic information of the road itself. It can be a traffic light, it can be the exact lane and more information of the road itself. All this data is harvested and ingested in AWS. And once Mobileye are collecting enough data, they are starting to build a high definition mapping of the entire continent, it may be. And as Bensi mentioned, it requires a vast amount of vCPU. As you can also, we can refer to you for the joint case study that was recently published, where we discussed about a 400K vCPU in parallel running in AWS for several weeks to build those maps. So this is the product, and this is based on the Spark technology, OSS Spark, managed completely by the Mobileye and RAM team to build those maps. Mobileye have used a third-party container orchestration to manage this workload. And as Bensi mentioned, they wanted to expand the tools and components that they use, and were looking for an ecosystem that has an increased availability and adoption worldwide. And they chose Kubernetes and EKS as its platform to be used to be, and they have basically migrated this entire workload from the third-party container orchestration to AWS EKS.
Wow, it's absolutely fascinating. And it's clear that there were so many different challenges that you really had to weigh as you were thinking about what's the right approach. Now let's get into really like the integration Amazon EKS into the infrastructure. Can you tell us that story of what that experience was like?
For us, one of the major advantages were the fact that EKS, when we're using EKS, we don't have to create the Kubernetes clusters ourselves. We're taking everything is prepared for us without messing with Kubernetes at all, which is a very hard thing to do, to manage Kubernetes clusters yourself. So this is a given, first of all. And then all of the base components you need to run something, like you need DNS, you need network, you need storage, all those things are provided easily by EKS blueprints, which are ways to integrate various components into a system very easily. So our DevOps team, this is not my team, I'm a programmer, but our DevOps team prepared the environment for us. And it was actually very easy comparing to the previous third-party orchestrator we used, because everything is ready. You have Terraform ready for you and you just need to implement it in your environment. So the beginning was very, very easy. And to get to a system that the basic, the hello world Spark application works was very simple. But it got very complicated after that. Let's keep it to later.
Yeah, another part that I'm also curious about that I'm sure that's on people's minds is when you're adopting really a new technology, there's a lot of different changes that have to take place. Part of it is being the cultural aspects of a lot of different teams now adopting a new tool, really a new way of maybe even as just a new culture of way of actually being able to develop applications. So were there any changes that within like the whole software engineering team had to make? And I'd love to hear what your lessons learned from that change of having to actually, as an organization, use Kubernetes.
We are developing a system that our other developers are using. So what we try to do is to make everything very easy to the other developers and to replace everything under their feet without they actually know that this is happening. But for this to happen, we had to learn ourselves to use Kubernetes, because this is, as you said, it's a very different animal. It's a very different way, approach to how to manage stuff. So most of the developers, their tools kept working. We've replaced everything in the code so everything seemed the same for them, even though it ran in a completely different way. But for us, for my team, we had to learn how to work with Kubernetes, which is very different. You're doing everything is the base components are different. You have pods instead of Dockers. You have the instances are not something you just connect to and see Dockers on it. You are connecting to pods and you see everything in different granularity. There are namespaces, there are different clusters, different the Kubernetes context, all those things we have to learn. It was at the beginning, it was very confusing because there are so many terms. Everybody telling you there is a service account and service and pod and namespace. But after a week or so, all the new terms are actually making sense. And they are actually, I think for me, it's much easier to use it, because in Kubernetes, I think one of the major advantages that everything is very visible. You can see each component on its own and you can see exactly what it's doing. and how it's doing it. The shift was a bit confusing, but it was very good for me.
And I will elaborate more. Together with the AWS account team, we were working with Bensi's team and other team members as well, also to work on education about AWS EKS, about knowledge sharing, best practices, how to create the AWS EKS ecosystem in the environment of the customer. We have also were using other projects of AWS, like the data on EKS. And I invite you to listen to a previous Amazon podcast that was recorded recently, is talking specifically on Amazon data on EKS. And the data on EKS project offers open source resources for building modern data platforms on Amazon EKS. This is a project that were heavily used by REM team, and Bensi can also discuss it further, how it assisted them in their journey. And we didn't mention a very important use case, that all the vast amount of instances and workloads running at REM are like more than 90% of it is based on EC2 spots. So this is another challenge that we will need to tackle and to consider in the journey. And working very closely with the AWS account team and the data on EKS project, we succeeded to achieve this migration. As Bensi mentioned, we have tried to provide the Mobileye end customer using the Spark application the exact environment or even better environment with EKS versus the other container orchestration that were before. So this was the main challenge, to provide that the customer of the platform will don't feel the difference between those systems and will achieve the same results even better and with much greater performance and speed versus the other system.
So amazing. Bensi, can you give our listeners just a sense of like how long did this entire process take from being able to scope it out to actually being able to start using the Amazon EKS in production?
So the initial process took, I think, 4 months to get to an environment that, which is actually very fast, because in 4 months we created a system that can run hundreds of thousands of vCPUs at the same time. It is hard. This was only the initial process, because after that, we had to start, first of all, a very massive testing on the platform, just 4 months to prepare everything, then massive testing. And we have many rounds of testing, identifying something that we need to do, want to do differently, and then actually change it and test it again. So it took us also a while. This took us several months also. While I can explain on some challenges we had along the way, many of those were actually related to our own platform. And then the migration. The migration is a very hard and long process that actually still occurs, because it's good enough that you have a system that works, but to migrate all the users, it's a really big headache. And internally, even though we created a way to replace everything underneath the users without them actually knowing it, still some experience are different and people want to do the change in their own terms. So it's actually another a few months to do that as well. So we started February last year, and we are still migrating. So 4 months for developing the system, the initial, then several months, I don't remember exactly how much, to testing it in scale, in massive scale.
Wow, absolutely amazing. So now, what performance improvements have you started to really see from this architecture?
I think the most impressive improvement is that you can, first of all, run several environments with different configuration at once. Let's say you want to run different versions of Python on different Spark applications. This is something that was not even possible in the previous orchestrator we have. And now we do have it and we actually use it. Let's say you want to run different Spark versions. Let's say you want to run different configuration. This kind of job needs more memory. This kind of job needs more CPU. All of those things we had in the previous orchestration system, we were very static. We had to use the same configuration for all of the Spark applications. And now we're running dynamically. We have different things that are running all the same. So this is the most important improvement. Also, the implementation of third parties became very easy. For example, we tested, I think, 3 different monitoring and logging solutions. And to test them was actually just deploying some Helm chart and starting to run. While in the previous solution, we had to do very complicated deployments, and to make something get to all of the nodes everywhere could take us a month. Also, another thing is like things like environment variable. Some environment variable can control the way you are working. For example, just something that happened to us this week, some timeouts to S3 variables. In the new platform, we're doing it instantly. In the moment we're changing it, everything from this point on changes. And in the old platform, it took us maybe a week or 2 weeks to deploy it. So the improvements we saw are everywhere. Performance-wise, it's very complicated because some parameters are very different and we are still not able to say exact numbers on our improvements. So I guess we have also a technical blog that will write about it, and we will probably have better numbers till then.
Daniel, I'd love to hear, you were helping Bensi and the rest of their team on the architecture. How are you looking at Amazon EKS and specifically cost effectiveness in this architecture?
So in regards to cost effectiveness, is the ability of using the EKS construct like AWS Carpenter to better utilize the infrastructure of AWS. And for the specific use case of running a very large Spark operation, what we were using is that on the driver instances on the workload, we used RIs in order to maintain those instances and for better price performance. But for all the worker nodes, we were using EC2 Spot. And we were utilizing the EC2 Spot working together with the AWS account team to identify the better location and to better utilization of Spot instances. We're working towards the best practices, for example, how to use EC2's diversification with different types of instances, utilize the availability zones of AWS, and even utilizing the AWS SPS API, that with the SPS API, you can monitor and query the AWS regions for the availability of Spot instances and the probability that you will have to get the Spot request and to fulfill the Spot request for your desire. So we have utilized all the best practices that we have to offer to our customer to better utilize the EC2 Spot in order to reduce cost and to make the workload as best and cost efficient as we can provide to our customers.
Always love Spot instances. That's a really good call out. So last question is for both of you. So now that you've gone on this journey, and I know it's still continuing of using Amazon EKS, I'd love for each of you to give some advice to someone who's listening who is at the very early stages. They want to be able to start using Kubernetes. Maybe they also don't have that experience as well. And just based on your experience, what advice you'd have for them. So Daniel, why don't you start?
First is we have a lot of AWS documentation and resources. You can start with our formal AWS documentation about AWS EKS and best practices and getting started with EKS. After that, you can explore the project of data on EKS. It provides a lot of information and open source tools and resources how to get started with running Spark workloads, specifically Spark workloads or other types of open sources that are part of the data on EKS project with your project. So if you have a project that is part of data on EKS that already supported, I heavily suggest you get started. And we have our CloudFormation templates or CDK templates to get started with Amazon EKS and data on EKS project. And if you are working and you have the AWS account team, get in contact with the account team, with your AWS account team to better collaborate with the account team. They can provide you the resources, knowledge, and connect you with the correct personas inside AWS provide you the best practices for your specific workloads.
Bensi, what about you?
So for me as a developer, I would just say, don't be afraid from all of the scary Kubernetes terms. Don't be afraid. They are very simple once you get to know them. It's okay. Don't be afraid. Use open source tools. Use Carpenter. Use Spark Operator if you're using Spark. You can use one of the many solutions for logs you have. Use them. Don't be afraid. They're very nice and easy to use. And when you're getting to big scale, so first of all, understand that this is a challenge and ask help from the AWS team, because for us, once we reached a very large scale, they helped us a lot. And it was really a game-changing help. So yeah, I think that's my message.
I love that advice. And especially the one about, yeah, Kubernetes. I mean, when I go through the documentation, when I talk to customers, it really does feel like a different language with all the different terms and how you have to think about things. So I appreciate you saying that it's not as scary as it sounds. Daniel, Bensi, thank you so much for being here on the AWS podcast. I know both of you have really inspired someone else who's listening who wants to be able to make that journey into Amazon EKS. So thank you so much for being here today.
Okay.
Thank you, Julian.
Thank you.